This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Among the fields of oil.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The price of oil hit another all-time high today, $135 a barrel. Then it slid back a bit, mainly because the dollar gained value. But the gap between oil supply and demand looms as a huge problem. Oil fields around the world just aren't producing enough to keep up. In fact, the International Energy Agency is working on a study of 400 oil fields. Our correspondent in London, Stephen Beard, has been looking into this. Stephen, what's the IEA say about these fields?
It says that the problem is a lot of them are getting pretty old, and a major problem is lack of investment. Companies and countries simply have not been putting enough money in to develop these fields and to produce more capacity.
And what does this mean for the price of oil in the next few years?
Well, it obviously means there's going to be upward pressure. Now, the higher the price goes, that presumably will dent demand. But we've already, as you say, got oil at $135 a barrel. Goldman Sachs is forecasting $200 a barrel next year.
Does the IEA have any suggestions on how we can close the supply-demand gap?
The agency says what's required is much more investment. Now, if this were a completely commercial industry, these high prices would trigger automatically a lot more investment. But as Leo Drolis, a highly respected oil analyst here in London, points out, this is not a completely commercial industry.
Oil-producing countries have nationalized industries. In a number of cases, the funds that are, so to speak, given back to the industry to invest and expand output are not forthcoming.
So, he says, the oil producers really do have the consuming nations over a barrel.
In the bygone era, gunboats would have been sent out to areas that were reluctant to produce more oil, so to speak. But, of course, these days it can't be done.
Although, of course, as we know, Congress is considering an alternative. It is talking about suing OPEC.
So lawsuits instead of gunboats.
Indeed.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
On Wall Street, the Dow has some catching up to do after consecutive 200-point losses. It's not catching up quite yet. So far, get my screen here. The Dow is up 5 points, actually, to 12,606. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are flat. Stocks were down in the early going. In Asia, stocks finished mostly lower. European shares are down a fraction so far. One of the most frustrating issues of our time has to be health insurance. States are going back to the drawing board trying to come up with something new, like health plans with no frills. Florida just signed something into law this week. Insurance companies have to offer cheap plans without all the extras. But as Dan Gretsch reports, people better read the fine print.
The Cover Florida plan allows insurers to cap reimbursements on some procedures and sheds many previously mandated services such as acupuncture and podiatry. Insurance companies could also limit how many days of hospitalization it will cover.
You know, you get what you pay for.
That's healthcare policy expert Uwe Reinhardt with Princeton University. He says this plan will give people a false sense of security.
One might call it insurance, you know. You get a little bit coverage, and then on the third day of a hospital stay that really requires aid, they tell you, well, you're on your own now. You either go home bleeding, or we're going to forfeit your car and your house.
13 other states have passed laws allowing similar bare-bones policies, but the plans haven't proven very popular. Florida aims to start selling the policies in January. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Airline stocks are getting hammered this morning. Airlines in several countries said fuel costs are tearing up their bottom lines. Air France, Qantas, Japan Air, they all say they'll have to raise ticket prices. And of course, yesterday, American said it would start charging $15 to check your first bag. That prompted a reaction from a lot of passengers.
I honestly don't know the economics. I know somebody has to change on flights or otherwise the airlines are going to go under. So either prices have to go up on tickets or they've got to find other sources of revenue.
I can't afford to go to Hawaii. I had to give back my reservation. $1,100 to go from California to Hawaii.
Very unhappy with it. Obviously, the cost of everything is going up, and it's a service that you come to expect to be free. And obviously now it's just going to cost more like everything else.
Passengers aren't the only ones affected by Americans' money problems. The airlines expect it to lay off thousands of people. This is the Morning Report for Thursday, May 22nd on Marketplace.org. Congress is working on a bailout for hundreds of thousands of homeowners. The government would help refinance loans. But what about cities and counties hit hard by the mortgage meltdown? Congress takes up that question today, as Steve Henn reports.
It's not just borrowers or Bear Stearns who've taken a beating in the subprime mortgage mess.
The impact of foreclosures on neighborhoods is debilitating.
Phyllis Betts teaches urban planning at the University of Memphis, and she's studied what foreclosures are doing to properties there.
It's become quite clear that foreclosures are driving blight. Our hardest hit areas, actually, are middle class neighborhoods.
Neglected, foreclosed houses are driving property values down across entire neighborhoods. House Democrats passed the Neighborhood Stabilization Act earlier this month. That would give local governments billions to buy up abandoned properties. But the Bush administration has called the bill a bailout for lenders. The House is holding a fresh round of hearings, including one today, in hopes of winning enough new support to override the president's promised veto. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
What's the most annoying thing about cell phone companies? Well, it's probably got to be those contracts and their penalties. Well, things might change on that. Jeff Tyler reports.
Cell phone providers say it's only fair to charge customers up to $175 when they cancel their contracts early. Companies say the fees cover the costs of all those cut-rate phones. That's not how Bob Williams with Consumers Union views the fees.
These are used by the phone companies as a way to keep their customers locked up.
Dissatisfied customers have filed class action lawsuits in several states. The industry wants the Federal Communications Commission to give it immunity. Again, Bob Williams.
It would give them billions of dollars in protection. In California, Singular, not so long ago, had to give people their early termination fees back.
In return for legal protection, the phone companies would let customers drop cell phone service in the first month without penalty. After that, any cancellation fees would be prorated. Williams says the industry isn't giving up much. Some companies like Verizon already offer these services. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Reading stories about people buying food and gasoline on their credit cards because they don't have enough cash. That's not a good sign for the economy, which is very much driven by consumer spending. If people have too much personal debt, they won't be buying anything but food and gas. Economics professor Stephen Fusari says what this adds up to is a deeper recession than normal.
The recession of 1990 and 1991, as well as the recession of 2001, were, I believe, somewhat milder because consumer spending held up reasonably well. If we look back to the middle 1970s or the early 1980s, when we had deeper recessions, consumer spending dropped during those periods rather significantly. So as we go into this period, when high debt is likely to cause cutback in the household sector, we have to expect that the recession will be deeper than what we've seen the past two downturns in the economy.
But exactly how does that personal debt affect the bigger economy?
When consumers are building up that debt, it's a stimulative factor for the economy because it allows them to spend more and creates more revenue for business. But when they have to pull back, when they have to pay down that debt, consumer spending necessarily has to fall. The saving rate has to rise to make the payoff of the debt possible. The economy is going to slow unless there's some other source of spending that comes in to fill the gap where consumers have left.
What do you think we should do about this?
It's a hard problem. In the short term, it's going to be very difficult to do anything to prevent a recession and probably to prevent a rather long and deep recession. Over the longer term, it would probably be better to have a system that relied less on consumer debt, maybe more on higher incomes, faster wage growth, stronger investment, stronger export markets to help sustain the economy in the future. So we don't rely so much on building up debt or on having a housing bubble or a NASDAQ bubble or the other kinds of things that have supported the economy in recent years.
Professor Stephen Fusari at Washington University in St. Louis, thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Share your comments with us on our website, marketplace.org. A couple weeks ago, we told you about a deal between the Swiss bank UBS and American investment firm BlackRock. UBS was planning to sell BlackRock about $15 billion of shaky mortgage-backed securities. But I guess BlackRock was a little short. UBS loaned BlackRock 11 of the 15 billion. That's how bad UBS wanted to get rid of those things. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.